We're learning Michtam Eliyahu in the Hebrew edition, volume 1. It's on page 99. The name of the topic is Hamoshel V'Hanimshal, which we would translate as the story and the message of the story. The Moshel is the parable. The Nimshal is the message that the parable or the story teaches. Says Rav Desla, Hamoshel hu sipu dvorim shlo hoyu v'lo nivro. A moshel, a parable, is normally a story of things that happened which never were and which never happened. It's just a concocted story. Often it's an exaggerated story. It's just a little excerpt. What's the objective of a parable? Kol ha'emes v'ametzias ha'shebo, the truth or the reality of the story. Hu rak b'meh v'ad kama shu siyua. Its whole function is only to the extent that it can help the listeners to grasp the message. As the story, sometimes a person wants to convey a message which is a little bit subtle, a little bit not so simple. So you use a story, you clothe the message in a story, so then it becomes more understandable, becomes more palatable and more understandable. So that's what we know a parable to be. Mi'ata ma'anoim al odom. Therefore, what would we say about the person hayoytim yibeis hamidrash who would go out of from a class? Ve'en biyodo el ha'moshel. He comes away from the class. He only knows the story, the parable, but he doesn't know the message. Right? What would we say about such a person? You know, you missed the boat because the story doesn't really have. It's just a vehicle. It's like, you know, you buy a product in the supermarket, but you come away with only the packaging, and the actual product itself fell out. So you come back with you've got the outside packaging, but you don't really have the contents. Amnam, however, chul shazu, this weakness, alachizus hamoshel v'azivus hanimshel, this weakness of holding on to the parable, holding on to the story, and missing the message. Imitsuya v'chaya odom is something that's to be is commonly found in our lives. Yoisim mashu male al daito, more than you would think. This idea of a person got the story but he missed the message of the story is something that's really a real problem. It's very common. And Rav Desla starts with this. He himself starts with a parable. Hayeled mishtasher b'tzatzuav. A child gets engrossed and has great pleasure from his toys. Teva shvura nasi svina. He's got a broken box, becomes his ship. And he's the captain of the ship. Right? He's got this broken box, this grocery box, but it's for him. It's a ship, and he's the captain, and he's sitting in the boat, and he's sailing the oceans. Ubishashu oisik v'zeh, and adimyon ve'enov kemetzius. And when he's involved in it, he's fully engrossed in it. So then imagination becomes a reality. Imagination becomes a reality. Achioma agrees with Tzal. Rishol Salanta would say, Hagoizel tatzua min atinoik, one who steals a toy from a child, haru kamatbia svi noisov umachiv batecheroishe shel mevugo. It's the equivalent of sinking the ships or destroying the factories of a grown person. Because it's his reality. He gets into this reality, and that's his life. It's his world. It becomes his world. Everything else is not significant. Just like we pay no attention to really what's going on with our neighbors, or you're not really interested that much in what's around. You're engrossed in your own world and your own interests. So therefore, for the child, his toys become his world, and if you take it away from him, you suddenly upset his whole world. You suddenly dismantle his whole world and destroy his whole world before him. Now, what about adults? Says Rav Desla, Hamavuga kva azov mischakim keila. A grown person has already left such toys. Ach, however. However. Kama min adimyon yesh b'mesh hu shoyf elov. However, how much imagination is still rampant in what he is striving towards? He's striving towards different things. But also there, just like with the child, in his game there's the whole imagination, the box becomes the boat, and etc. So therefore, with us also, we let our imaginations, we get caught up in a certain imagination, a certain imagery, a certain belief. And how much of that is mixed into really what we're striving towards? As an example, a person wants respect, he wants recognition. People like to be recognized and to be respected for what they have achieved and who they are. People should acknowledge them and respect them. Every person wants and loves and enjoys getting covered, honor. Gam yashev boru lo she'eino roidev covered. And even someone that's clear to him that he's not pursuing honor, someone who's not looking for honor, he's not looking specifically for recognition, for what, right, what for in Israel they call tumi. Tumi is tumat lev. People should look at him, notice him. Not looking to be, you know, the one who sticks out, the one who laughs the loudest and tells the jokes and etc. Even someone who's not actually looking for honor, we call mokum nehu. Nevertheless, he gets pleasure from it. When you do receive this recognition, when people do stand up for you, or they recognize you, or they praise you in some way, so you do get pleasure from it. People in your circle, people in your neighborhood, will recognize your value. When a person feels that people recognize who he is and they acknowledge who he is, in and also likewise, he also would have pain. He'll feel pain if his importance in the eyes of his neighbors, of his friends, would be less. If it would be less than what he imagines it should be his, according to his view. A person who feels that he should be getting a certain amount of respect and doesn't receive that respect, so then he feels a certain pain. Right? If A treats B in a certain slight way, slights him. Somebody treats him in a light way, so naturally there's a sense of hurt. There's a sense of hurt that people slight us. Right? And I think Rav Pam would say that Hakol Aniyim Etzel HaKovod. All of us are paupers. We're all paupers when it comes to receiving respect and recognition. We're all in need. In other words, right, when you're hungry, then you can eat. When you're not hungry, you can't eat. If you're not hungry, you can't eat. But in terms of honor, receiving honor and respect and recognition, we're always hungry. All of us. No matter how much you receive, you can always have a little bit more. So this is from the least people, from the smallest babies, right, to the mamish, to talmidei chachamim, to rabbonim, and the, you know, when you give kovod to someone, that's naturally he accepts, he enjoys it. There's a natural acceptance and joy for it. Now, let's get on to the point. However, how much does it actually add to you when other people show you recognition or respect? What does it actually do for you? How actually does it change you? What difference does it really make that you're important in the eyes of others? How does that actually change your life? Hello, kovod amiti. Surely, true honor, true self-respect, is a person's intrinsic importance. Right? If a person, let's say, is doing something important, he's doing something very significant, and he's contributing to the community, etc., and he's doing an important task, he is an important person, because he's doing that which is important, that which is vital. He's helping people that really need his help. So therefore, intrinsically, he is an important person. If a person has real importance, real importance, he's really doing something very useful and very important. What really does he care if his friends know about it or not? Other people know that he's doing. Sometimes you have the concept of a hidden tzaddik. No one really knows what he's doing. He's doing amazing things, but he keeps it totally under wraps. And the truth is, it doesn't really make a difference. He still has his importance is not less from the fact that other people know about it or they don't know about it, whether they recognize him or they don't recognize him, they take his pictures, they don't take his pictures. Ultimately, what he's doing is what he's doing. If he's doing something important, then that's good. So really, true honor is a measure of a person's own importance in terms of what he does with his life. So So that's if a person is intrinsically important. Really, recognition from others should make no difference at all. And if he's not an important person, what about the other way around? If he's not an important person, he's really doing nothing. What does he profit if people mistakenly think that he is doing great things? He's actually not doing anything. But people somehow, for some reason, are misled into thinking he's a celebrity, this person. He's a very important person. And people show him honor, which he's not deserving. What does it actually give him? What is he actually gaining from it? So that's when we move into the world of imagination. Right? And the imagination goes like this. If other people show me importance, if other people regard me as being important, then so he starts thinking that I must be an important person. If people show me importance, it must be that I'm really important. And a person who within his own self has a lower self-esteem, he has a lower appreciation of himself, he really doesn't think very much of himself, he becomes more and more dependent on receiving recognition from others. And sometimes the most miserable people, really, they are the most hungry for some type of recognition, some type of respect that you can show them, or affection, or some sort of compliment, or acknowledgement. So the person really has nothing, so therefore he hangs on to the honor that he receives from other people, and he uses that, and in his imagination, he uses that to give himself self-worth. When he doesn't have it. So therefore it can actually be something that's quite negative, right? Because instead of knowing the truth that he really should get cracking, start doing something with his life, right? He's feeding himself, he's allowing him to feed himself on an imaginary importance which really doesn't exist at all. Then you get the individual who has to develop this imagination even to a greater extent. Right? A more extreme example of this is a person who wants to buy respect with money. He wants to buy the respect and recognition of others with money. Right? So you know this, whatever he does, he donates or whatever he gives, he makes parties, or whatever it is, he throws the money around, he's got the money to spend, and he throws it around. I call Yoidim, everyone knows, Lefanim Gamhu, and even sometimes the person himself knows. That other people are not really interested in his covet, in his honor, they're interested in his money. That's what they are. They all fawn around him and they pay him compliments and they respect him and they stand up for him and they compliment him and they admire him and everyone, wow, he's such a fantastic person. Right? But really, they all know that they're only doing it because of the money that they expect to receive by giving him this attention. And he also knows it. That's the extent of the delusion. He himself is paying for honor, which he knows he's paying for. He knows he's only getting it because he's giving out money for it. And even so, he allows himself to delude himself that this is really I'm an important person because look how many people are honoring me. But they're just putting on a face. It's an act. They do an act in his presence as if he has this importance. However, he's deluding himself, seducing himself in a sense, to take pleasure from which is that which is a substitute of anything real. It's not really the real thing. Kibbutz chitzoni. Some sort of external importance. We're saying about this person, he deludes himself into taking pleasure from that which is just a substitute, some sort of external honor, instead of a recognition of true importance. And this takes the place of the reality of his self-worth. He lives in a life of imagination, of delusion, and he's detached from true reality. Okay, that's one example of living an imaginative life. Right? And we all are guilty of this to a certain degree. Now he brings us now a different example, another example of the same thing. Now similarly, those whose drives, whose ambitions are for building up the material world, right, that this world should be the perfect world. Mevakshim Ashirus, they're people who seek wealth, material wealth. Umedamim, and they imagine, again, it's for the imagination. Umedamim shim achya sigu yumushorim. They imagine that if they'll just get it, they will be happy. You just have to look in the papers, and you'll know that these wealthy people also have their pains and their worries and their anguish and their hurt. Kas v'tzar, right? They have their frustrations and they have their suffering. Kechol odom, like any other person. Ve'im em nitzeli midaygus shel oni. And even if they are saved from the worries of the pauper, yesh lem acheres, they have other worries to take the place of those worries, different worries. Ve'yosek doyles v'imkoyim, sometimes even bigger worries, sometimes the worries are the bigger worries. Ka'amu chazal, like our sages taught, mar b'nechosi mar b'dayga. Our rabbis have taught, one who has more property has more worries. Like the more property he has, the more worries he has. Yimei p'nui mimelocha, and if they're free of work, they don't have to work at all. They can afford not to work at all. Abetolam v'yedilei shimu. So we know that being idle brings to a type of madness. It brings to a type of craziness, a desolation. It brings a person to this. V'gam yidei zim, it also brings him to immorality. Starts pursuing things that are really dangerous and evil to himself. But yeah, Oisha, so where's his happiness? Where's the happiness that can come from having this wealth? I saw in an article they brought from some secular study that they took two extreme examples. I don't think it was real examples. I'm not sure if it was real examples or maybe they actually followed such examples. But the example was they took two people who were more or less the same. And each one had a different occurrence in his life. One person won the lottery in the United States. The lottery there's like something like $300 million. And the other one became a paraplegic. Lost everything, right? He became wheelchair bound from the neck down. So the ones enjoyed the greatest good fortune. And the other one's suffering the greatest tragedy, right? Lost the use of his limbs. So the one obviously is on a high, tremendous high. The other one falls into this tremendous depression. But what they checked with these people, like 3-4 months later, that their happiness level had returned to more or less the way it was before all of this happened. Basically, the person and people sort of compensate for themselves in their own lives, and they were basically just as happy as they were when none of this had happened. They reached back to the same happiness level, because it's all about attitudes, it's all about how you look at life, how you appreciate life. And they also brought there a story of a man who was thrown into prison on a trumped up charge. Well, he wasn't guilty, and he spent 30 years in prison. And then finally they found some evidence that he's innocent. After 30 years they released him. And he said in a newspaper interview, this person said that he has no regrets, that this was the best thing that could possibly have happened to him. Because it was a period of growth, whatever it was, however he explained it, he had a way of justifying what he'd gone through. He said, you know, it was really a blessing. This whole thing that he spent 30 years in prison was not his, no regrets. So this is the person's ability to, it's all how you look at it, right, exactly. So here, this is what Rav Dessler is saying. People have this imagination, they imagine that wealth is going to suddenly solve all their problems. But again, it's just imagination. That's really what it is, and it's not reality. Because you can check the facts. Check the facts, don't rely on what you think it's going to be. Why see the facts? People aren't interested in the facts. They live in this dream world. All this that a person desires and lusts for all of the pleasures of this world, here we come to what the issue is. The reason why a person desires all of the pleasures of this world is because he wants to silence, and he was doing it with his imagination, he wants to silence the sense of lack which he finds within himself. Every person has within himself a lack. We are incomplete beings, all of us. We're all lacking. We all have holes in our lives. So he's imagining that he's going to fill this hole with material items, with material goods. That will fill the sense of lack, the sense of missing something, sense of that I'm lacking something. Now this lack, what is this lack that we all feel, that we all have, is a spiritual hunger. Right? We've been created, we put into a world, and we've been given this ra'av ruchni. Hashem has given us a spiritual hunger for spirituality. Every person. And it's a gift. Baruch Hashem, we have this. Hashem has allowed us to feel that we are hungry for spirituality. To feel that we're hungry for something higher. In a sense, that's really also physical hunger. Imagine if a person didn't feel physically hungry. Imagine if you never felt hungry for food. So you keep forgetting to eat. Oh yeah, I forgot to eat today. I better quickly eat something, right? And you'll find that the most forgetful people die of hunger because they just don't remember to eat. Right? You know, the tzaddikim would live because they'd be conscientious. Oh yeah, I have to eat. And the shoyim, they're so busy with the good life, they forget to eat. They all die of hunger. Hashem implanted in us a feeling of hunger. Oh yeah, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten. I feel hungry. So that is, that sense is something that's been given to us to Hashem. You could be insensitive to it. Just like you don't feel the many other things that go on in your body. You're not really aware of it. Not really aware of all the workings of your body. What the body's doing and what's not doing. You don't do it. It's a machine that's working almost automatically. So the same thing happened with hunger. You'd forget to eat. It would be terrible. But that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about a physical hunger, an appetite. We're talking about a spiritual hunger which gives a person a sense of an emptiness and that there's a gap in his life. Gagule and Ashoma Mematsav Shlemusui. The soul has longings, pangings for a sense of wholeness, of completion. Right? The world of completion is the spiritual world. Right? The world of lack is this world. This world is the world of lack. It's just that's the reality of the world. And it's for all of us. We all are in a situation of lack. That's how Hashem creates us. That's how we are in this world. In the Maseilas Yeshayim, speaks about it in the first chapter. And this hunger cannot be satisfied by the items of this world. It just doesn't do the job. It doesn't work. It doesn't, right? Like if a person wants to save money, so he's going to pour water in the petrol tank of his car instead of gas, right? It's a big saving, yeah? Instead of spending 12 shekels a litre, I don't know how much it costs, he's going to just pour water. It costs almost none, right? Except, what's it going to help? You know, he's just going to destroy the car, right? The car's not going to run on water. So the same thing. This spiritual hunger that we have cannot be filled. It cannot be fulfilled and filled by material items. And therefore, that's what the rabbis teach, that no person leaves this world with even half of his desires fulfilled. No person reaches even half of all that he wants. That's all of us, every single person. Eshlo Mona reads him a time, he has 100, he wants 200. Because imagination can never be filled. Imagination is something that just expands without any limit, and you can't fill it. You can finish a puzzle, you know, you can finish the crossword, but you can't finish filling your imagination because it's just so huge. So it comes out that adults also are playing with toys. They're also involved with their toys. It's just the difference is he's more stubborn than the child is. The child, you take away his toy, so he'll cry for a few minutes, and then he'll get on with it. After a few minutes, he forgets about it, he starts doing something else. The adult, you take away his factory, you take away his right, he's not going to forget about it. He's going to hang on to that loss, that sense of loss for years. He's not going to forget what he lost, what was taken from him. So we also get involved with imagination. We do it to a greater degree, in a sense, to a much more desperate degree than a child. And the more they show this adult person that the proofs of his mistake, you're making a mistake here, this really is not a loss, this really is not important, this really is not truly what life is about. On the contrary, he strives even more to prove that no, his imagination is the true reality. You start arguing with him, say, you know, all your obsessions are imaginary. He'll argue back and he'll try and prove to you, no, it's not. This is the reality. This is really what life is about. This is all that's important in life. Right? You're living the imaginary life. Right? He'll say about a religious Jew, you know, those are the good for nothings. They do nothing with their lives, right? My life has true value. I'm truly doing something important. And much as you try to prove to him, there's a stubbornness. Right? The stubbornness, it's a human quality, right? There's a stubbornness that, no, he's going to hang on to. No, he's right. He's the one who's got the right perspective, and this is the reality. Now, let's go on. Now, if we continue to examine this with spiritual vision, with spiritual eyes, nire, sheloi rak adifus hamoisris. It's not only the pursuit of the extras of life. Right? You have the basics of life and then you have the extras. Basics is what you need to live. Obviously everyone needs the basics. And then there are those who want the extras. They want all the trimming. They want all the fancy stuff. Right? They don't just want a garment. They want a garment with bells and whistles and frills. Right? So therefore, now, they don't just want a house, a room, a bed. They want a palace with all stuff. So it's not only the pursuit of moisture, of the excesses of life, luxuries of life. And again, etzem chaya odu. Rather, it's the actual life of a person, the entire life of a person. The etzem olam, and the actual world, the entirety of this world. Elim tachlis umetzias mitzad atzman. They really have no goal and no reality. There's no true purpose in the world and in life in this world itself. This world itself does not have a purpose. And our lives in this world, our reality in this world, living in this world, is not really towards a tachlis. You know, you don't arrive at your goal. On the contrary, you arrive at the grave. You know, so what did you know? My success. Yeah, this is my success. Look how they're burying me in the ground with nothing. Right? This world itself doesn't working towards a goal. It's not working towards an objective. The einam ela chona letachlis, and the reason is because this world is itself only a means. This world is only a means to an end. It's not the end. The end is not in the physical world. It's not in the material world, and it's not in our material existence. The kvakosav balatanya. The balatanya writes from the bechina ruchnis briasa oilam ruyali kori lo yesh miayin. Balatanya says that in terms of a spiritual appreciation of the physical world, this world should not be called something from nothing. Yesh mi'ayin, something from nothing. Hashem, from nothing, created a world. That's not really true. That's not really the correct... It is true. But that's not really the correct way to look at it. You shouldn't look at this world as being something from nothing. Yesh mi'ayin. Ela, ayin mi'yesh. You should look at this world as being nothing from something. There was something, and Hashem turned it into a big nothing. Huh? And that's really what the world is. Because the holiness and the light, the spirituality of this world, it never needed to be created. Hashem Himself fills all of reality. Hashem is called Or Ein Sof, right? The endless light. Hashem Himself is the source of all spirituality and light and beauty and pleasure and elevation. So it never needed to be created. Hashem never needed to create spirituality. He is spirituality. He never needed to create pleasure and light and beauty. He never needed to create all that, because that is all He is, and He does fill the entire reality. It's all within Hashem. All of the yesh, all the total success of what life can be is all within Hashem. Rather, what He created was achinian tzimtzum hashpo. Rather, what He created was the limiting, the compressing, the drawing out and the suppressing of his influence and hiding the light. As so to speak, when Hashem created the world, he created this huge vacuum within himself. Right? This black space, this black hole, this big black hollow, he created within himself. He withdrew from his own divine presence, and he created this black hollow, which emptiness, this total emptiness, this dark black emptiness that we call space. And that's really the creation. The creation is not the adding of anything, it's the taking away. Hashem has taken away in order to create this world, which is this reality.
The whole concept we're talking about here now.
We say that Hashem is all. Hashem is all, everything. Hashem is everything. So everything, you can't add to everything. Everything is everything. You can't. Hashem himself is everything. How did he create this world? He created this world by creating a hollow space within himself, so to speak. He created like an empty hole within himself. Like he pulled himself out. He pulled his influence. He withdrew his light from a certain space, and that space became dark because he had withdrawn from the space. Hashem, it became dark.
Oh, dark.
Hashem withdrew himself from the reality that we call this universe. And therefore it became a dark universe because he pulled out, so to speak.
This universe is called dark.
Right, he created darkness. And that's really what we say in the bracha. We say it every day we've done Ma'ariv. Kamo yoitze or, Hashem forms the light. Uboire choyshech. He creates darkness. Darkness is artificial.
Creation.
Darkness is the true creation, and it's artificial. Hashem created darkness. He created this hollow space, this blank, this blank canvas, whatever you want to call it. And that's, just by the way, that is from a pasuk in Yeshayahu. What we say in the davening, Ma'ariv Yotze Or Boire Choyshech, is a quote from a pasuk in Yeshayahu. If so, it comes out that the entire reality of this world of ours, this lowly world of ours, is really the hiding. It's created by hiding away the true reality, which is Hashem's presence. My removing his presence and creating this darkness, that is the creation of this world. You create this world, so to speak, by taking away from Hashem's light. Imagine, you can use the analogy as follows. Imagine you have a picture of a huge fire. Right? It's pictures of a huge fire. And it fills up the whole page. You see this huge fire. And you take a dark crayon and you start blacking it out. And you black out the whole picture and you just leave one little light in the middle. You just leave one little circle of light in the middle, of fire in the middle. And everything is black. So in a sense, that's what Hashem has done. He's created this reality by removing himself from this physical world, and it's for a tachlis. The reason he's done it is for a special goal, a special objective that we, with our own efforts, it is a deep idea. This is a very deep idea. A very deep idea. Right. This is all for the purpose that we ourselves should uncover Hashem. Uncover Hashem. Right. There's a game the kids play, hide and seek. So all the friends are hiding. Now, it doesn't mean they stopped existing. Right? All the friends have not really disappeared. They're behind the couch. That's where they are. They haven't really ceased to exist. But the kid is looking for them. He says, where are my friends? They all disappeared. I'm all alone in this world. There's no one left. So it's like they don't exist anymore. But it's really they're hiding. So to speak, Hashem has removed his presence from this world. Like children are playing hide and seek. And it's like he's not present in this world. I don't see God in this world, you know. I talk to Hashem in my davening, I don't see him. He doesn't appear to me, I don't see him. He doesn't answer me. Where is he? So in a sense, this is like the game. This is the creation of this world is this game where Hashem has removed himself. But it's for our benefit that we ask with our own effort, with our own work, we should uncover. Right, that child is now going to search for his friends. He's going to now look all places to try and find his friend. We're going to uncover Hashem's presence in the world and within ourselves. We're going to bring Hashem into the world. That's our job. Yeah.
Is that the Matara?
That's right.
This is connected to Hester Panim.
Yeah, that Hester Panim is that Hashem has hidden himself.
Mm-hmm.
We normally use the term hestaponim where things are especially dire, especially hidden, right? Where you see the wicked people are right on top and they're oppressing the righteous people and they're making their lives miserable. And they are committing terrible crimes. You have the worst people with the highest power committing the worst crimes against the best people who have nothing. So hestaponim is that Hashem hides His face, but there are degrees of that. You see, Hashem reveals Himself when something good happens. It's in a sense Hashem has revealed Himself a little bit. He's shown Himself a little bit. He's peeked at us just a little bit, and we feel His presence. We feel He's helping us.
Right.
Right. There are periods in history where Hashem is more hidden and less hidden. Right. Time Esther is called Esther itself is Hes Hastera Stirpan. Right. The name of Esther is that Hashem was hidden in that period of history, as He is today, also to a different degree. Right. And this hiddenness, this fact that Hashem hides Himself and He removes His presence. It's in order for that we should have choice. We have free choice to choose. See, if Hashem is right here, we can see Him, then obviously no one's going to sin. No one's going to defy Him. You don't defy the King in the King's presence. If you can see Him, then obviously you have to believe in Him. Then He's here and you can't rebel against Him. You wouldn't, you know, He's too big, He's too strong. You can't rebel against the King in the presence of the King. So that we should have free choice, Hashem has removed Himself. Yeah.
In the times that they said Mikdash, Hashem was more real. He was more there.
More visible.
There was no
Hes upon Him then, no? Right. To a degree. There still was Hes. There's degrees of it. There's degrees to which Hashem hides Himself.
The Shekhinah was present in the base of Mikdash.
I know, but the reality of Hashem was there, but we didn't see Him actually.
So it's degrees of hiding. He's more hidden and less hidden. So where you sense Him, when you feel Him, so then He's more there, so to speak, right? If you're in a place like the Beis HaMikdash, if you're standing in the Beis HaMikdash, you would feel Hashem more than if you were outside the Beis HaMikdash.
That's one thing. Now, when you start to speak, I thought He was discussing really how Hashem created the world mamish. He created from nothing. That's what He did.
That's what we say.
He created darkness actually first.
In order for us to make the world,
He created darkness first.
Right.
That's what you said?
Yeah. Right, right. It starts with darkness.
He didn't create the darkness.
He did.
In a sense, He created the darkness because that withdrawal was something that's unnatural. Right. Artificial.
There's no light, there's no darkness.
But it's artificial in a sense because Hashem is everything. Hashem fills everything. Right. So artificially He's removed Himself from this reality for our benefit. And now after that,
He'll unveil His light, His full light to us.
Right. Well, okay, to a degree, because if he revealed His full light to us, we'd cease to exist, because then He'd be everything again. Then we would lose any type of independence. So He'll reveal to a certain degree. Okay, these are already Kabbalistic concepts. There's a concept of once He created that blackness, so then He introduced us a very, very thin ray of light into the world. Because we're not totally in the dark, there is this thin ray of light. And the real light, we're not talking about, it's not physical light. The real light is knowledge. The real light is awareness and the fact that we can grasp certain concepts. We can grasp the idea that there is Hashem. We're aware, we can understand that there's Hashem. We can understand that there's a Creator who gives us life. And that awareness is light, is a certain light that we enjoy. We are enlightened to a very small degree. Right? But it's not a full enlightenment. Right? We can't see the angels. We can't see Hashem's presence. But we have somewhat of an awareness that He is here. Yeah, sorry.
There's light at the end of the tunnel, in other words. We're in a tunnel, and there's light at the end of it.
Okay.
There's our light.
All right.
When we die, they say there's the light at the end of the tunnel.
That's what made me think of
right. Okay.
Where does Hashgacha Pratis come in here? I think Hashgacha Pratis is also a very big connection.
Hashgacha Pratis is that He is very much aware of what we are doing, and he supervises whatever happens to us in our lives. If something happens,
we're also aware that He's there. It's not that we don't know. If we could have things and say, Hashgacha did it, so I...
To the degree that you're aware that certain people who choose not to be aware and they block it out. They block out the fact that Hashem is helping them. And you have that. It's a human. There are other people who seek to see Hashem in their lives. You look to see Hashem in what's happening. If something happens to you, especially if it's something that you didn't expect. So then the correct question to ask yourself is, why is Hashem doing this to me? What does He want from me? Mm-hmm. And if that's your approach, and that's the healthy approach, then you're already keying into what Hashem really wants from what is the purpose of your life, and what are you supposed to be doing with the situation you've been placed in? Each one of us has his own unique situation, his own unique life. Each one of us has a totally different setups. So therefore, that's in order that we should do our own specific individualized job in this world, it's basically all the general job of uncovering Hashem's presence. We're bringing Hashem into this world. Hashem seeks to be in this world, and that's really the challenge. Let me just finish the paragraph here, and we'll stop for today. So therefore, the reality of this world, as we said before, is the hiddenness of the true reality for the ultimate goal, which is the revelation of Hashem's glory. And this was done, this place of darkness was created that we should have free choice. We should be the creators. We should be the ones who bring the light into this world. It's up to us to bring Hashem's light into this world. And therefore, that's why you have people who don't want to fill this gap in their lives, this emptiness in their lives, with spirituality. They refuse to pursue a spiritual pursuit, right? They'll avoid it like the plague. Keep me far away from those rabbis. I don't want to see them. Hashem goyim yom avodas hayoyim. So by them, when they finish the job of the day, they finish their work for the day. Toichim lemale hazman bedvorim reikim. They look to fill their time. Because Hashem's given us this goal. He's also given us the time to fulfill the goals. He's given us the empty gaps. And He's given us the time to fulfill those gaps. But they look to fill their time with empty pursuits, with emptiness. Right? Oblashoinim, the expression they use, La'arugas hazman, we have to kill time. We have to kill time because, you know, it's pressing too heavily on us. Penyu muchachini pagishes atzma. Because chas l'sholam, I might have to spend some time with myself. And I might have to get to know myself. That would be a tragedy, right? If I have to get to know myself. To see exactly what I am, what I'm doing with my life, to confront what my life is really about. So for some people, that would be the biggest tragedy, to confront the tragedy of their own lives. That they're living a long-since life. They're actually just playing. It's just playing toys all the time. They're really going around in circles and not doing anything with their lives. They're just marking time. They're just passing the time. Achona b'tachlis, right? They're doing a nonsense job, which is getting to no goal, and there's no end inside. Moshel b'nimshol, they're stuck with a story. The child playing with a toy, but the box is not really a boat, and you're not really a captain, and therefore it's just a game that you're playing. And at the end, after you finish the game, we're going to throw that box in the garbage, because it's only a box. So therefore, people whose lives are all filled with the emptiness of the imagination of this world, and they seemingly fill their lives. Their lives are full. I've got so much. I'm so busy. I'm so full. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm doing 101 things. They're not really doing anything, because it's just like a cat chasing its own tail. It's just, you know, not just filling time with something that really doesn't have real substance to it. So that's the person who lives the moshav. He lives the story. He lives the parable, but he never actually gets to the message behind the parable. Exactly why has Hashem placed this in this world? And he misses the point of his entire life.